Welcome back to the Hockey House Podcast, episode 135, presented by Optimex Sports. I'm your host, Mackenzie Murphy, as we bring you the latest news from the ACHA and AAU college hockey. Back for another weekend of the offseason. We got another edition of our championship circuit of interviews this week. Looking forward to that. But let's throw it over to the guys, Herm and Collins, who filled in for me last week. Herm, how are things going?
Things are good. Just knocked out the Comet season ticket member survey. Not a ton to report in Utica at this point. I think we got the Wine and Chocolate Festival coming to the odd. So that's all that's really around the corner for the moment.
Are those are together, I'm assuming?
I think it's kind of like a suburban mom sort of convention, basically.
I thought you were about to say it's sort of like a KFC Taco Bell collaboration. You get both at the same place. Love it. Now I feel like I have a lot to share because I wasn't here last week. The week before that was pretty eventful for me. So I got to run through some things, make sure I check them all off here. I was out last week recording because I went down to Merrimack College to see my sister play. I haven't had the chance to see her play all spring, and I've seen her play three times in the last week, and they've gone 3-0 in that stretch. So it's been a heck of a ride. Not to flex on anybody, but my people down at College Hockey South who were able to meet my sister when she came to Savannah with me for the Savannah Classic know how great she is. And they've been asking, you know, how she's doing. They were asking why she wasn't at AAU Nationals. I had to explain to her that she's a Division I lacrosse player and that she can't get a week off in March to go to Philly. So I went and saw her play against St. Francis a week ago, and they won 19-7. She had 6 goals and 1 assist. The win against Merrimack, they went down 7-1 in the first quarter. They came all the way back and they won 14-13, and she had 2 goals in that game. Then they played St. Francis in the first round of the playoffs, and she had 5 goals. So Grace Murphy, the only Division I athlete in the Murphy family, is killing it, and the Stonehill Skyhawks are going to the NEC semifinals this weekend down at Sacred Heart. So looking forward to watching those. I won't be able to make them, but it's been a heck of a run to get to see her play the last couple weeks, and I thank you guys so much for covering last week so that my family and I could go down and see her play at Merrimack. A couple other cool things I got to do is when we went down and originally saw her, I was only planning on going down and back to see her. I got to my girlfriend's Friday night in Boston, and I got stuck in traffic just looking at TD Garden. And like the big Jumbotron just says, like, get your playoff tickets today. And I was like, oh man, like, I really don't want to take out a mortgage to go to a playoff game. But like, if I were to check a ticket app tomorrow morning and then I can get them for under $300, like, I'm so going. She loves hockey. She loves the Bruins. But she's like, I am not paying $300 to go to a playoff game. Like, somebody else is going to enjoy that experience much more than I will. I mentioned something with my brothers at the lacrosse game. And I was like, yeah, I checked this morning. They're like, 180, like, I'm thinking about pulling the trigger. And then my older brother Joe is like, I just found 3 tickets in the balcony for 180, like, let's do it. And so we went to the game. It was my first ever Bruins playoff game. I think I've been to 3 Bruins games before that, so unreal experience. They scored, you know, on the second shift, the fourth line scored, so it was cool. And my older brother was saying, like, a playoff game, it's like, you know, you grow up playing NHL, and was it like NHL 11, they had like the playoff feature with, like, that was when they first came out with like the fans, you know, at the rally towels, and like, that's exactly how it looks in person. It was so cool. So the Bruins took game 1, and that was an awesome experience. I feel like I've been telling everybody all year long about my men's league team, Merlino Steakhouse, and we had last time I had to actually go back and listen and figure out what I said the last time I was on, but we went down 1-0 in the series. We came back, we won 2 straight to win the cup. Funny enough, we were the last thing going on at the rink, so they actually turned off the cooling system when we dropped the puck at 7 o'clock, so that by the time, you know, we got off the ice and they woke up the next morning, that the ice would be completely melted and they could push it out. So overall, it's been a great last couple weeks. I've got some exciting news at the end of the pod too to share with everyone. So we've just been buzzing and looking forward to another fun weekend, and honestly getting back, and I feel like you guys can attest this, but I feel like we have less to talk about on this week's episode, but we have a lot of information about the few topics that we're going to talk about. Like, during the year, we probably have like 80 different topics and we have to talk about them each for like 30 seconds, where this time of year, we can kind of sit down and take a deep dive into like the very little news we have going on in the ACHA and AAU college hockey world. So without further ado, I did want to kind of segue this here because our fourth member is not with us again tonight. Colin Fitzgerald is killing it in the FPHL playoffs. The Binghamton Black Bears punched their ticket to the Commissioner's Cup Finals this past weekend with an overtime victory over the Motor City Rockers. So Fitz is out again. He has vowed that he will join us once the playoffs end, continues to win games, so we will not be hearing from him this week.
Fitz, he doesn't know it, but my schedule is clear for those home games. Maybe there's a trip to Bingo in my future over that weekend, if I can potentially reach out to the Black Bears front office to go and shoot. I already tried to get one friend involved. I'm going to try and see if I can get another to see if we can both get media passes. Maybe there's some celebrations on home ice. Who knows?
I probably have something going on that weekend, but I was like, oh man, like I would drop anything to go to Binghamton and see Fitzy play in the finals. Since Fitzy's in the finals, we wanted to do a Hockey House highlight here because it's the Binghamton Black Bears taking on the Carolina Thunderbirds, and there are a lot of ACHA ties between the two teams. And now FPHL rosters are interesting this time of year because you go on the team's website and they have a lot of rostered players. And so I'm not quite sure who's still on the team this time of year. And maybe there's some guys missing that are playing in the finals. Again, we don't have Fitzy here to correct us on that. This is according to the current team websites, who's on their roster. And then we cross-reference that with elite prospects here. So we're going to highlight first the Binghamton Black Bears. They have 7 players with ACHA ties and 1 coach with ACHA ties. So starting things off with Dakota Bond from Adrian College M1. He was named the FPHL Defenseman of the Year this year, finished the season with 16 goals, 35 assists for 51 points in 36 games with the Black Bears. This year, he spent a little bit of time in the SPHL. I think he played 4 games for the Roanoke Railyard Dogs. We talked about Brendan Pepe last episode, so a couple of ACHA studs linking up down there for a little bit. He won a national championship with Adrian in 2021. He's been killing it this year. Herm, I left you a note. We got to do him a favor and help out with his EP profile picture because just a horrendous shot from, I think it's got to be high school. So I'm sure you've got plenty of photos that maybe we could update that. And then, of course, going down the list in alphabetical order, we have our co-host of the Hockey House Pod. Of course, that's Colin Fitzgerald. He played at Indiana University, which is ACHA M2. He's actually the only ACHA M2 guy in the finals. Plenty of ACHA M1 guys. Fitzy started the year in Huntsville in the SPHL, but he finished the year, played 15 games in Binghamton, good for 2 goals, 6 assists. So wishing Fitzy and the crew best of luck in this one. Plenty of Adrian College guys, though, on this Binghamton team. They got Daniel Stone, who won a national championship with the Bulldogs in 2018 and 2021. He's actually the only member on this Binghamton team who is a part of both Adrian national championships. They have Brody Thornton, who won a national championship in 2021 and 2024. He's the only one on the team who is part of the most recent 2 national championships. He had 5 goals, 17 assists, and 22 points in 33 games for the Bulldogs as part of their championship run, which we'll get to in a little bit with our interview. Then you have Connor Smith. He won a title in 2021 with Adrian, 27 goals, 36 assists, and 63 points in 46 games with the Black Bears this year. Brendan Stanko is also on the team. He won a title in 2021 with Adrian. He actually played 34 games in the SPHL with Roanoke this year. And then we have another ACHA M1 guy from Michigan, but not Adrian College this time. It's Austin Thompson from Davenport University. He has 56 points on the year, including 101 penalty minutes in 55 games was played this year. He spent 4 seasons with Davenport after playing his freshman year at Wisconsin Superior NCAA Division III. And then also the head coach has ties to the ACHA, head coach Brant Sherwood. He was actually behind the bench with Temple last season. He started the 2022 campaign off as an assistant coach for Temple before he was named the interim head coach for the Black Bears, a position that transferred to the full-time head coach at the start of the season, but he became the interim head coach in December of 2022. So lots of ties to not only the ACHA, but the Adrian College Bulldogs as well. Herm, I would have loved if they had just come out for a game wearing black and gold Binghamton Black Bears jersey, because I think we talk about it all the time. I feel like I thought there was like 3 or 4, but now it's like 4 or 5 guys. One of those being Brody Thornton. He appeared in 5 games for Binghamton at the end of the regular season. So hopefully he gets some time in the finals here as well. Taking a deep dive at the Carolina Thunderbirds, they have 5 guys with ACHA ties, a couple of them coming from Kent State. They have Justin Biona, who is a Kent State guy. And then they have player coach John Batita. He is a player coach for the Thunderbirds. He played a number of years at Kent State. Chris Sielek is an Iowa State guy. He played actually a couple seasons with Worcester State before going over to Iowa State. graduated last year and then jumped to the Fed. You have Cody Karpinski, who spent some time in the ECHL. He's the goalie for the Thunderbirds. He played ACHA M1 hockey at Lindenwood. And then last but certainly not least, one of our guys, Roman Kramer from Robert Morris, a former guest of the show. Check out episode 88 with him and Justin Gadamski. Former guest of the show, played at Robert Morris, NCAA. He had 16 goals, 25 assists, and 41 points in 35 games for the Thunderbirds. He started the year in the SPHL with, I believe, Fayetteville, the marksman. Heck of a series. He also went viral for like the roller hockey heel toe drag goal 2 years ago. So games 1 and 2 will be in Winston-Salem at the Annex, which again, more ACHA AAU ties. That is home to the ACC playoffs and a number of teams in that area. Friday and Saturday night this weekend, then the series will shift to Binghamton the following weekend. Game 3 will be Friday, May 10th, with games 4 and 5, if necessary, on Saturday and Sunday. So fingers crossed. I think we're pulling for the Black Bears in this one, but regardless, there will be ACHA guys lifting the Commissioner's Cup at the end of this series. So Herm, any thoughts on this one? I think it's pretty cool that the FPHL, you know, you can just watch on YouTube. All those teams do YouTube live streams. The Binghamton stream is phenomenal too when they have home games because of the AHL equipment they have in the building. But any thoughts going into this one?
I'm always impressed by Binghamton on social. They are a team that when I was looking through marketing meetings as teams we wanted to emulate, their name came up. And from my one opportunity to shoot in Binghamton, I can't even imagine that place rocking with a playoff atmosphere. I'm hoping I get the chance to make the trip down for it.
Yeah, and I bet the league is pretty pumped with these two teams in the finals because they are two teams that draw very well. The Veteran Visions Memorial Arena, whatever they call it in Binghamton, is a lot nicer than the Annex, and that's no shame on the Annex, but that place also gets rocking, and I'm sure it will be for games 1 and 2. But Collins, any best wishes for our guy Fitzy as he gets ready for the finals here?
We're pulling for your kid. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to jinx it, but I feel like either way, we got to get some champions on the pod here. There's too many ACHA guys to not.
Want to get to some player awards. We talked about, I think, a couple episodes that we'd get to some player awards. We're going to start the offseason awards with our player of the year awards. So we'll go through all the leagues and give some stick taps to these guys and girls who played phenomenal in the 2023-24 season. Kicking things off with AAU Division One, you had Josh LaSalle. The Niagara University goalie led all D1 goalies in shutouts this season, finished with a 1.32 goals against average and a 0.943 save percentage. We talked about him earlier in the year. He actually got called up to the NCAA team for a game against the U.S. development team. Just a rock star in the crease, Collins. We saw him in Philly. He was doing he had the goggles on doing the warm-up. He's using all the technology. He's getting all the advice from his goalie coach using the VR headset, which is insane. And he was locked in. And one of the big reasons that Niagara-South Carolina game went to overtime, Niagara came back, tied it, and sent that thrill into overtime. But it was going to take a lot to beat Josh LaSalle because he's a key part of that Niagara team. And they have him listed on the roster as a sophomore. I think he played a couple of games before being a full-time student. So we'll have to keep an eye on him for a couple of years to come. But Collins, as a goalie, you got to see him play a couple times. Is there anything that stood out to you other than the fact that he was doing his VR warm-up in the hallway?
Definitely a Nationals moment, one of the moments of all time. His positioning is locked down. He's got incredible mobility. Yeah, I mean, that, like, what more could you ask for in a goalie? He's fundamentally very sound, but can make the big athletic saves.
Next up in AAU Division II, their player of the year was David Israel from Florida Atlantic University. He led FAU to a top ranking. They were number one for what felt like forever to start off the season. Finished the year with 17 goals, 27 assists, and 44 points in 21 games played. Got sidelined with an injury in the College Hockey South playoffs, and you know, they dearly missed him in those playoffs. You saw FAU get upset by Clemson, I believe, and then, you know, they chugged along in Nationals. They made it all the way to the national championship game. His injury was also so severe that they couldn't travel. You know, he couldn't go on the plane with the team, and so they actually flew him in the day of the national championship game. And unfortunately, it was enough. FAU just coming up a bit short in that national championship game against Florida. But a heck of a story. David Israel, you know, comes back for that fifth year and leads the way for the Owls. So want to give him some stick taps for his Player of the Year award. And then moving on to AAU Division III, this is a player I didn't know anything about, was just doing a deep dive before the show here. And Will Marshall from Florida Southern University, the Mox, freshman from Webster Groves, Missouri. He had 35 goals and 35 assists for 70 points. He is a freshman. He played 2 years in the NAHL for the Odessa Jackalopes and made his way to Florida Southern, competing in AAU Division III. Saw a couple comments on the Instagram post of this graphic that he was playing on rookie mode, and I can't even imagine what that's like going from the NAHL to playing in AAU Division III. But he led Florida Southern to a College Hockey South final and an AAU Division III final. And, you know, the boys got shut out in that national championship game against Miami, but you know, he still gets Player of the Year. And as a freshman, that's amazing. And as we keep going through this list, there's a couple of freshmen that stand out too. So I want to give some stick taps to Will Marshall and the entire Florida Southern team, because they had a great year this year. And then in AAU Women's, they named Hannah Gordon the Player of the Year. The Binghamton University netminder led women's goalies in save percentage from Brooklyn, New York. She played the previous season with Suffolk, NCAA Division III school in Boston. So pretty cool to see her, you know, stepping over to the AAU side of things and leading the way for Binghamton, who had a good run at Nationals. Clearly carried the workload. That Binghamton team was shorthanded when they came to Nationals, and she faced a lot of shots. So good to see her get named Player of the Year. And we'll go over to the ACHA side of things. Got a couple more to go through. I'm going to completely butcher this name, and I feel so bad because I know the Purdue Northwest guys listen to the pod. In ACHA M1, we had the Player of the Year being Sam Bordages. The Hearst, Ontario native led ACHA M1 with 62 points and was tied for the league lead with 27 goals. He actually became the first athlete in Purdue Northwest school history to be awarded a National Player of the Year honor, which I thought is very cool. I know a lot of schools listening to this aren't even tied to their athletic department. Purdue Northwest is, you know, the athletic department supports the team. So really cool that they came out and said, hey, this is the first time any of our athletes have ever been named a Player of the Year in their sport. So we've talked about Purdue Northwest a couple times over the last few weeks and, you know, how far they've come in the last 2 years jumping up to ACHA M1. So I want to give some stick taps to Sam there. In ACHA M2, a guy we talked about in our Nationals tournament preview episode, Charles Eam from Concordia University, Wisconsin. The freshman from Chicago, Illinois, led the ACHA with 51 goals this season. He added 35 assists for a total of 86 points. 51 and 24, Collins, just like you read about. That's got to make Danny Heatley fired up. The NCAA team, though, could use his help next season. The Falcons just finished 8-19 in NCAA Division III, competing in the NCHA conference. That's the same one that Adrian College competes in at the NCAA level too. So a guy that tore it up, and it seems like Concordia, Wisconsin every year has a couple of these guys who you're like, how are they not on the NCAA team? But he tore it up, led the nation in scoring as a freshman. So I can only imagine the things this guy's going to do if he returns to the ACHA next season. Moving along to ACHA M3, our guy Nick Spolick from Mizzou coming home with the Player of the Year recognitions, the former guest of the show. If you want to tune into episode 111, that one actually is the only episode we have up on YouTube as well. So if you're looking for a special Hockey House feature, tune into YouTube. Got to give the plug there. He was phenomenal in his interview, but the Missouri native had 65 points this season, 20 goals, 45 assists, and led Mizzou to the ACHA M3 national semifinals on home ice. So a heck of a year for that Mizzou Tigers team, and you know they turned that program around and made huge strides with Nick Spolick leading the way. So I want to make sure we give him some love. And then in ACHA Women's One, we had Kayla Flanagan from Midland University as captain of the Warriors. Flanagan had 46 points in 32 games, 14 goals and 32 assists. And Midland, a team we talked about a lot in the first half, had a record-breaking year on the women's side, setting school records and going unbeaten in that first half. And Flanagan was a huge part of that. So stick taps to her as well. And then wrapping it up, Caitlin Koster of Niagara University. In 19 appearances, she amassed an impressive 48 points, including 21 goals and 27 assists for Niagara. She also led College Hockey East in points and was number 6 in the nation in women's division 2. So stick taps all around to those student athletes. It is a long season, and to be honored with that is tremendous. And Herm, a variety of different schools being represented here. A number of these teams, you know, weren't even maybe the top 5 teams, right? So these student athletes were carrying a lot of the workload during the regular season.
It just shows you how wide, how expansive, and how deep this league is across the nation.
Two athletes from Niagara, you got two athletes from College Hockey South, and then other than that, you know, geographically players from all over the place. So moving along, I got a couple other topics to address. Herm, you got a taste of those Adrian College championship rings. I saw the video, but I haven't really had a close-up look of them. But has there ever been a bad looking championship ring, right? I mean, you knew when they turned around and did the revealing that those boys were going to get fired up no matter what.
I mean, you can see it in the Instagram post. That thing is clean, minimalistic, and just stunning looking.
That is something that hopefully they remember for a really long time. And I know the boys are going to be fired up once those finally come in. We had some, conference realignment talk. It's kind of conference realignment talk. It's college sports these days. Everyone's moving conferences and whatnot, going up and down. But Nebraska is adding an ACHA M2 team. So the program that has historically competed at ACHA M3 for a high level for a while now, you know, they have a rink on campus. They are moving up to ACHA M2. They will join Mizzou and Arkansas, those matcha teams that are moving up. They are going to fill that void by adding an ACHA M3 team as well. So some exciting news for Nebraska, you know, coming from Syracuse, where we only had one team on campus. I loved that we only had one team, right? You were kind of the go-to guys on campus, but I think Syracuse is certainly a school that's big enough that could have a second team. And I think that just helps guys when they're getting recruited, knowing that, hey, like you got that Cushing where, you know, you can still go to the school and play hockey, where I think sometimes kids get deterred because they're maybe afraid if they don't make the team. And so I'm sure, you know, you're going to get maybe kids who play just high school hockey or U18 in Nebraska who just want to go, you know, to the big school in the state. And maybe those guys are going to get an opportunity in M3 where maybe some of those higher recruits are going to go to the M2 team and compete. So some exciting news for Cornhusker fans in that department. And then if we're talking about adding teams, we got to talk about College Hockey South. They have announced the addition of two new women's programs, joining Alabama and Georgia Southern in 2024-25 are Oklahoma and Tennessee. So College Hockey South grows from 6 teams in year 1 to 10 teams in year 2 on the women's side of things. Just a phenomenal momentum swing for women's hockey. You know, not even women's college hockey, but women's hockey in the U.S. I know the numbers are up all across the country with USA Hockey, but for there to be college teams now in Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, and Oklahoma all competing underneath the College Hockey South umbrella is certainly exciting. Collins, I'm curious, some big brands joining College Hockey South on the women's side. Who are you most excited to see next year?
Without a doubt, it's got to be Tennessee. You can't go wrong with the Vols orange and white checkerboard pattern. I'm really excited to see what heat they're going to bring on the jersey front. Curious about Oklahoma, how that's going to work, because that's some travel right there if I've ever seen it.
Yeah, I'm assuming there's going to be plenty of showcases for the Lady Sooners to get out there and make travel a little bit easier. But yeah, I'm looking forward to Tennessee too. That looks like they got a custom logo. I know the men's team has, you know, the Ice Vols logo, but they're going with the Vol biting the hockey stick. I'm sure they're going to do the powder blue, as they call it, Summit Blue at Tennessee, a tribute to Pat Summit. We saw the men's team come out with those alternate jerseys for the Savannah Classic. I would love to see the women's team do the same thing. And another team we talked about is Alabama. Their women's team has been on a tear since they started. So they announced some coaching decisions that we talked about last week. So all in all, it is an exciting time for the women's game, and especially in College Hockey South, because it seems like they get new teams every single year. Wanted to do a little portal update, because I think sometimes we do this at the end of the off season. We talk about, you know, guys going from NCAA to the ACHA, and I figured maybe we could have a segment of the show where we just keep that updated throughout the summer. So I have two updates from the portal this week. Former UMass Dartmouth forward Jackson Tillinghast is transferring to his home state and joining MSU Denver next season. So he's going NCAA Division III to ACHA M2. He's going back home. The Louisville, Colorado native is joining MSU Denver, a team I think was just kind of excited to be there at Nationals this year. It was the first time in program history. They played their way through regionals. I would expect them to have another great season next year, and I'm sure Jackson is pumped up to go back home and play for them as well. And then you have former SUNY Fredonia forward Nick Newman. He's transferring to Stony Brook next year. Stony Brook always seems to get NCAA transfers in the offseason, or even if it's not even the offseason, sometimes they'll get the midseason as well. So they have a very strong freshman class coming in. I saw a lot of EHL kids committing to Stony Brook. So it'll be hopefully a bounce back year for the Seawolves. That's the update from the portal. I did have a story I wanted to tell before we get into some stick taps here. I'm a firm believer in like everything happens for a reason, right? Like what goes around comes around. And I've amassed some towels in my hockey bag that aren't mine. You know, sometimes you show up to the rink and you don't have a towel to shower. And sometimes somebody else, you know, lets you borrow their towel. And a couple of occasions I've taken that towel from somebody and forgotten to return it. So they're in my towel rotation, and I'm very big on washing my stuff in my hockey bag, you know, every time I play. So these towels have lasted a while, but I remember getting this teal beach towel at a summer hockey tournament. I want to say in 2019. I've had this towel for a very long time, and it's not my towel, but I've taken very good care of it. Tuesday night in our men's league finale, a poor guy on the other team, Steve Cackley, old school guy chasing around us young guys. He's rocking the old school Nathan Horton Easton helmet, no visor. And a shot from the point gets tipped right into his jaw, and he's just leaking oil right away. I can just see it dripping on the ice. There's no trainers here. You know, it's Tuesday night men's league, and I was the first guy to see it. And I was like, right away, like, we got to get this guy a towel. So I run into the locker room. I got my clean towel. I knew this is what he was going to need. You know, I come back out, give him the towel, and I'm like, man, I'm never going to see that thing ever again. This is why I'm saying, telling the story before stick taps. But sure enough, Steve, it sounds like he had to go get some stitches later that night, but he didn't lose any teeth, just a decent amount of blood on the ice at the Ham Arena. This happened with 8 minutes left in a game that eventually went to running time. And I kid you not, he came back out fully dressed for the handshake line. If that doesn't define playoff men's league hockey, I don't know what does. So gritty. He comes out, and then after the game, he came and returned the towel to me. And granted, the towel is just soaked in blood, and it's a stolen towel. So I just immediately, I thanked him for returning it. But as soon as he left the room, I threw it in the trash. So again, just a prime example of what goes around comes around. Somebody had offered me a towel in a time of need, and I returned the favor and offered somebody else that towel in a time of need. And now rest in peace to my teal hockey bag towel. So I thought that was a story that a lot of people would get a kick out of there, and some stick taps to our guy, Steve Cackley, because just an absolute warrior in playoff men's league, you know, wasn't spitting chiclets, but he was pretty darn close to doing that. And he came out for the handshake line. So I figured some guys would get a kick out of that. You know, not playing in the ACHA anymore, but I think we can all relate to some men's league content too. So Herm, it would have been a fantastic photo if you were there to capture it. When he got up and just looked at everyone, I was like, oh, man. All right, Herm, I'm going to turn it over to you because I'm a little tired of hearing my voice. I can't imagine how our listeners are doing here. But what do we got for stick taps this week aside from our guy Steve Cackley?
All right, we got some cute content coming out of Ohio. Andrew Wells and Remy. Black Lab, adorable. Tearing it up on the Bird Arena ice. Dog with the puck in the mouth running around in Athens, Ohio. Dog with the jersey in the Bird Arena locker room. It's adorable. Go and check the post out. It's all over Ohio hockey socials. We also got to give some stick taps to Penn State University Altoona for scrimmaging the sled hockey team, taking a page out of Syracuse University's book. Very cool post, and cool to see that this could be going around the ACHA as a little off-season activity. And then just a personal stick taps over to the Auburn women's hockey team. They're just tearing it up with some funny content over the off season. Mini mic questions. Some of the girls are out riding horses. It's nuts. It's filling the time, and it is great content.
I mean, the sled hockey thing is awesome. Like, I wonder too if there's a way, because sled hockey is such a fun game, such an accessible game. I would absolutely love to see more teams get involved with their community. I know the sleds can be expensive and not every rink has them, but I highly encourage, if you play at a rink that has sleds, you know, host a sled hockey event. If you have any questions, we can certainly put you in contact with people in your area who know how to do that. But it is so tiring too, and nothing like the humbling experience of just getting dominated in sled hockey when you've been so good at ice hockey for a number of years. So that's really cool. Herm, you bringing up Wellesley and his puppy. We got to get him on too once we wrap up this circuit, because now that he's retired from Ohio hockey, he's going to have some killer stories from Bird. The Auburn content has been killer this offseason, and love to see teams just being original this time of year. Like, there's only so many Almost Friday posts that'll get you through the summer. So love to see them killing it with the content.
Speaking of Bobcats, shout out to Colin Felton. He has been putting in some serious work over the offseason, trying to perfect his ranking methodology. and we're hoping to have a conversation with him real soon. You might see that integrated into some of our content in the coming year.
And not to make this the Blue Line Boosters podcast instead of the Hockey House podcast, Herm, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the newest hire behind the bench for Princeton men's hockey got his coaching start in Athens, correct?
That is correct. Sean Hogan is very, very quick to always point out that fact whenever someone had their coaching start in Bird Arena.
Yeah, that's going to be Ben Sire, who was recently hired at Princeton to be the NCAA Division I men's ice hockey coach, was a grad assistant at Ohio. Yeah, it looks like he got his master's in athletic administration and focused in coaching from Ohio University. So they're really cool to see. And, you know, that is a wonderful program that I'm sure many ACHA programs would love to have the ability to bring in a grad assistant every year. So that brings us to our interview. We have a great interview this week with Matteo DiGiulio and Noah DeCotney from the Adrian College Bulldogs, winning the title once again. These two actually played on Team Canada together at the World Cup of University Hockey last summer. So we have some stories from that. Have some stories from their run to the national championship this year. DiGiulio also, you know, went to the SPHL after the ACHA season finished up. So plenty of stories all around. And as always, this one is brought to you by Optimex Sports. Optimex Sports provides teams the opportunity to build and manage their own website. And the best part is these guys know club hockey. And I think it can be very difficult when you are a club president or a team captain and you're put in a position where you have to make sure the wheels keep spinning during the offseason. One way to do that is set up an Optimex website, because these guys know club hockey. So be sure to check them out using the link in our bio. And if you're interested in signing up, be sure to use our referral link at optimexsports.com/signup/hockeyhousepod. Optimex recently released a new feature that we're super excited about. It's been in the works for a really long time. You can now add a team store, a team site, sell tickets, merchandise, even make payments. So good that we have joined them as well. Be sure to check out hockeyhousepod.com for more. Without further ado, we'll turn it over to the national champions from Adrian College. We're pleased to be two members of the 2024 ACHA Men's Division I National Championship team from the Adrian College Bulldogs. We have senior captain Matteo DiGiulio and National Championship MVP junior netminder Noah DeCotney. Boys, welcome to the Hockey House Pod.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
What have the last couple of months been like at Adrian? I feel like you guys are pros at bringing home the national championships at this point, so I'm sure it's business as usual when you get back to Adrian with that trophy.
I mean, yeah, it's fun. It's a long season to kick your feet up and enjoy with the fellas a little bit, so no bad things to say about the last month or so. It's been fun.
Grind going to class every day, too, after the long season as well. So
I mean, you're a hockey school, but student-athletes, right?
90% of the students here are athletes playing some sort of sport, so it's kind of crazy.
You got to walk me through this whole process, because I've always wondered this. You signed in the SPHL after the season ended. Like, what do classes look like when you sign a pro contract?
Yeah, so I was kind of in a unique spot in the sense that when I played junior hockey before Adrian, I took courses at a school back in Canada. I was able to transfer them all in. So this was my senior year, my fourth year at Adrian, but I was actually already in grad school. So I was finishing my MBA, which majority of my classes were online anyways. So I was in Virginia playing and also doing my classes online. So it kind of worked out perfect.
Did you kind of know that you wanted to like explore going pro after the season ended? Like, how did that work? Did you have an agent? Like, did Roanoke reach out? Did you have some connections with some of the other Adrian guys who were playing pros?
I knew I wanted to play, I'd say around January, February. My coach helped me out just sending out feelers to coaches and teams. Didn't have an agent. It definitely helped that we had some guys who played for the program who were doing well and successful in Roanoke and across the league, like Brendan Stanko and Austin Rodebush, two alumni from Adrian, our team, were playing in Roanoke. So that definitely helped get me there. But yeah, I'd say mostly just my coach reaching out to teams and then them watching you play type thing. And it kind of just snowballs from there.
For the people tuning in, this is going to be a very heavy Adrian podcast, because earlier in the show, we talked about all the former Adrian alums playing for Binghamton in the finals for the Fed. So lots of Adrian talk on this one. But rewinding here, you both played pretty solid junior hockey growing up. Deco, I'll throw it over to you. Like, where'd you grow up? When did you know you kind of wanted to play college hockey, and how'd you find Adrian?
I'm from Calgary, Alberta, way out west in Canada there. I wanted to play college hockey as soon as I like kind of found out about it. Like I was graduating high school and I had no real plans on what I want to do with my life yet. Found out about junior hockey. I started that journey out in Fruitvale, British Columbia, middle of nowhere, small town, 10 minutes outside of Trail. And then from there, I made the jump to the SJHL in Saskatchewan with Weyburn and Humboldt. I went to Invermere, British Columbia, another small town, and back in the KI for my 20-year-old year. And then I started reaching out to schools, and Coach Gary Stallis reached out to me due to a reference from Dylan Kent, former Adrian College Bulldog, now Liberty Flame. But I started talking with Gary in that summer after my 20-year-old year was kind of canceled due to COVID. Did a FaceTime tour and everything from the comfort of my own home of the beautiful campus we have here at Adrian College, and it was a no-brainer to sign and come spend my time here.
Now, what does that recruiting process look like, especially being from Western Canada? And, you know, you learn about college hockey, and I know things are a little bit different in Canada with how, you know, university works. You find out about Adrian College, and it's, hey, there's this team, they're very good in the ACHA. Like, at what point were you like, wait, what is the ACHA, and like, why does Adrian have so many hockey teams on campus?
Well, so it was pretty early on in the recruiting process, because Kenny reached out to me and was like, yeah, like, what's your plan? I was like, I don't know. So I looked up the school and I saw like the NCAA roster, and I didn't see him on it. I was like, wait, what the heck's going on here? And then I saw the three other ACHA teams underneath it. And I was kind of like, I had no idea what ACHA was till probably my 19-year-old year of juniors, but it's been an unreal decision.
And Teo, you got there a little bit earlier, but like same thing, like walk us through where you grew up and how you kind of stumbled upon Adrian.
I grew up in Maple, Ontario, just north of Toronto. I played 4 years in the OJHL, all 4 years in Toronto in the area. So like, kind of like my backyard. It was kind of nice. I remember talking to some schools or whatever, mostly NCAA D3 schools, and that's where my sights were set for collegiate hockey. And then getting reached out by Gary Estalos, our coach, and Justin Fisher at the time, who was an assistant coach here, and just kind of seeing their email and like their record overall was 104-2-1 or something crazy. I was like, what the hell is this, dude? And doing my own research of what it was, because I wasn't super familiar with club hockey, ECHA hockey, being from Canada, like you mentioned, because it's a little different there. Liked what I saw in a simple email, emailed them back. Liked what I saw from the school. It kind of just went from there. It was the COVID year that shut down my 20 bomb year in the OJ. Never even toured here, never took a look on campus. I just liked what I heard over the phone and over a couple of emails. I said, screw it, I'm in, let's do it. And I just showed up one day in August, and the rest is history.
You saw the like the schedule from the year prior, and you saw that they beat like Eastern Michigan like 18-0. And you're like, oh yeah, I like scoring goals, I'll go here.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, I can play D1 and win games 18-0, I'm in.
I want to ask you guys about that, because I think that's like, you guys are in a pretty interesting situation at Adrian. You play like some of the best teams in the country. You know, you got Liberty coming to town. You're doing a series with Ohio, and you get down to the national tournament, and every game is a must-win game. But I know Adrian is moving to this new conference now, but for the last couple of years, like, you guys have had some really good teams in your conference. And then there's like, you know, the Eastern Michigans and the Toledos of the world. How do you like get up for those games? How do you balance that schedule?
Gary does a good job of kind of front loading those games and making them like either right after Christmas, right before Christmas, like using those games is almost like tune-ups a little bit.
Doesn't really matter who we're playing on the weekend. We try and play the same way every single game, every single time we're out there. It's kind of tough. You'll see one of the top teams in the country going up against another top team in the country, which helps the rankings. It's better prep, you name it. And we'll be playing against the 72nd ranked team in D1. It feels like a waste of time, but we tell ourselves that, you know what, we're practicing and playing against the best team in the country every time we practice, every time we're at the rink, like aside from those games. So we do a really good job of making it work, and clearly it shows, because once we get to the national tournament, we've been ready.
And we always come to the games too with the mindset of like, we're going to get the best of every team every single night, no matter what. Like, whether it is like an Eastern Michigan or it's a Liberty, like they're going to give it, they're all 100% against us. So we got to come ready for every single game, like, because we're going to get the best. Like, they're going to throw everything at us, their kitchen sink. No.
Looking up and down your roster, it seems like there's a decent amount of guys from Michigan, a decent amount of guys from Ontario. Teo, I want to ask you, like, how does, you know, playing in the OJ, like, how does that translate to the ACHA? How does that style of play? Was there an adjustment period your freshman year?
My freshman year was so tricky too, because I came in not knowing what to expect from the OJ shutting us down and like how different it would be. And first semester was like, we kept getting games canceled on the weekends because COVID tests would come back positive for other teams or vice versa. And it was, so I didn't really get our first games until we played like February or February maybe, November maybe, I don't know, against Liberty. It was late in the year.
Deco's like, I wasn't there. I don't know. Yeah.
But it was later in first semester, and it was finally like our first games. Playing against Liberty and that, it was a lot. I didn't know what to expect, honestly, and it was a lot better than I thought. It was really competitive. Obviously, an Adrian versus Liberty game is always good and always really good hockey. So in terms of the transition, I think it helped me that I had months and months of practicing and training with the team before actually getting that first game. So I was comfortable. And I think mindset plays a big piece into that. Like, I had the confidence at that point.
I think too, like, I played at Syracuse and we always played Niagara every year, and they had just a roster full of OJ kids, and like, yeah, they're big, they're physical, pretty hard shots. Like, is that kind of like the style of play in the OJ?
Yeah, the OJ is really diverse in the sense that you'll have your big physical strong guys, and then especially towards my latter years there, looking back and just watching now or seeing what's coming out of the OJ now, like, just like the game of hockey in general, like the small, the skilled, the high IQ, like, that's just not, don't want to say taking over, but it is in a sense.
And Deco, I got to ask you, because playing junior hockey in Western Canada, I mean, that is bus ride after bus ride after bus ride. Like, what is the longest trip you had to do, whether it was in the KI or the SJ?
So in the KI, when I was in Trail, that's pretty south of the border, or close to the border, like, where the town of Trail is 5 minutes from the border into Washington. And we had to go up to Hunter Mile House, which was like it's a 12-hour bus ride, 4 hours north of like Kamloops, I think. But so we ended up taking that bus ride in one day, because we went up, we played Hunter Mile House on the Friday night. And Hunter Mile House is exactly what it sounds like, just a middle of nowhere, like ghost town kind of. And when we pulled up to the rink, there were like skidoos, like sleds outside the rink. There were more sleds than there were cars. We played our game. We ended up winning like 3-2, hopping on the bus, driving 4 hours back south of Kamloops to play them, the 8 hours home. And then in the SJ too, like, it's a lot better in the KI, because you have like mountains and stuff to look at. Whereas in the SJ, it's just field after field after field. Like, I remember the long nights home during like the harvest season for all the farmers. All you'd see is like the moonlight and then the glow of like 12 combines going in a row, harvesting all their fields. Like, it was night and day difference. Pretty long rides for sure in both leagues.
And I was going to say, like, looking at your schedule, like, you guys don't do too long of bus rides. Like, most of the teams are pretty close to you guys around Adrian, right?
Yeah, I think our longest ride this year, like this upcoming year, will be Liberty or Niagara. But
Tay, let's talk about, you know, that first year, everything you guys went through your freshman season. Like you said, like, you're not even like thinking about adjusting to the level of play. You're just thinking about, like, you know, all the testing you're doing and going to the rink and like finally getting like somewhat of a season going in late February, and you guys go to nationals. You know, was that experience, I mean, I'm sure that experience was different, but you didn't know anything at that point, right? Like, going down to Maryville for the national tournament, like, what do you remember about that?
You're right, I had nothing to compare it to. Like, a tournament style like that is not like how playoffs are in juniors. Obviously, my first tournament, like, so many things just like you're worried about on the side, like when we got there, having to do your temperature test and your COVID test and stressing, like, holy, I don't want to come up positive and be done for the week. Like, just like random little things in your head. But, you know, it was a grind, both honestly, maybe even more mentally than physically. It was good. Obviously, the outcome was good. It was fun. I think that the group we had that year with our older guys really helped us, my class and us younger guys in that situation. Yeah, there's not much more I could say about it other than we won. So it was awesome.
And you got your first taste of, you know, playing against Minot State, and you guys, you know, have gone toe-to-toe now a couple times now in the national championship game. But, like, was that your first time getting a taste of them? Did you play against anybody on their roster ahead of time that maybe gave you, like, a preview of what you guys were going to face?
Yeah, they were – Minot's always filled with Western Canadian junior guys. So if I played against any of them that year, like, I don't remember if I did, because obviously I stayed in the OJ for all 4 years. But when you hear that, you just know they're going to be a big, tough, good hockey team, like, from the get-go. And that's what they are, obviously. So we didn't play them during the season. Actually, in like 4 years, we only played Minot during the season once at the Chicago Showcase a couple years back. But we've never traveled over there. They've never traveled here, at least in my time. So it's like literally you wait all year to play them in the tournament, which is kind of cool. Yeah, I don't think I played against anyone previously. I might have crossed paths. Hockey's a crazy sport, but there's probably a guy or two that I did cross paths with and whatever, but I can't remember.
And so, Deco, you get on campus. Is there a welcome to the ACHA moment for you during your freshman year when you get acclimated?
Oh, I think my biggest kind of welcome to the ACHA moment was probably one of our first games against Cincinnati. Because we played Cincinnati since my freshman year, we played Cincinnati D2, and then we had Mercyhurst. And it was kind of like, we dominated Cincinnati both games, and then we played Mercyhurst, and like we came into it. I was kind of excited, my first like legit college start, because like two Cincinnati games were exhibition. So we came in, I think we won like 5-1 or 6-1 or something like that. I was like, okay, like right on, like perfect. And then the next, like after the game, there's guys like slamming sticks, like actually getting mad because like we didn't get the spread. And that was kind of like the big welcome to Adrian moment, was like how important it is every game to get the spread. And 5 isn't enough, or 6 isn't enough, whatever it is. Like we need that 7th goal. And that just kind of got me like more so welcome to the culture of Adrian hockey for sure.
I've met Gary a couple times now, but he's like, he knows the ins and outs of the ACHA, seems like a player's kind of guy. Like, is he pretty aware of that leading into the game? Or at this point, do the guys kind of know like, hey, we got to beat up on this team?
I think the guys, like, we kind of know coming into it. We're like, hey, like, we can't not get the spread against some teams. Like, if we don't get the spread against some teams, it definitely affects our ranking, since our strength of schedule isn't always the toughest. But,
you know, speaking of Gary, is there a memory early on of him? Everyone always talks about like maybe some differences in the coach when you're getting recruited versus like maybe that first bag skate. Like, is there a moment that stands out to you that you kind of look back and laugh at now?
There's probably like 1,000, honestly. Gary, like you said, he's a really good player's coach, but he plays the line perfect of being like that hard ass per se, what he has to be in a good way. And he gets the guys respond well to it. Being like a freshman from a new country, never been here, no idea what to expect. He probably could have told me to like do jumping jacks on the ice mid game and go eat a hot dog. Like I was probably just doing it, and like a drill sergeant telling me what to do. Our bag skates, like, we do these drills called Kenai and Mike's Hard, and they are the worst drills. I'll go on the record and say it. If he's listening, he knows it already. And it's just a bagger. Like, Kenai is literally like a half an hour skating bagger before practice, where you just chew up the ice, and then all of practice is torched. Your legs are torched. You just want to go back to sleep. Like I said, he's a player's coach, but he plays the line perfectly, and he's a great coach overall, and that's why he's got so many wins and such a record like he has.
You get to the national tournament last year. It's kind of, it feels like it's you guys and Adrian, and then you kind of both work your way to the finals, and it's like, you know, this is the final we all kind of expected. A great hockey game from the start. You guys end up falling 1-0, but Deco, I got to go back to the beginning of the game, because you might have done the most athletic thing probably in your hockey career, is you toe pick on the starting lineup and somehow manage not to fall. Think that's like one of the most impressive things you've ever done on the ice?
I don't know about impressive, probably embarrassing for sure. Especially seeing the video that came out after. I came out and I must have stepped on a rock or something between warm-up and coming out. Of course, it had to happen then with all the cameras and all the guys from Minot staring down at me after. I talked to some of the guys when we were in Romania, and they gave me the gears for it too. They're like, yeah, we saw that. We knew it was ours. I was like, oh, son of a gun. But I'm honestly impressed I didn't fall either, but it was pretty close for sure.
You know, you see something like that before the game, because Herm was at the game and he got a photo of it. So he immediately like sent it to all of us. He was like, no context, club hockey here. It's crazy. Not only that, but like as a goalie, like how do you lock in after something like that happens? Like are you like changing up anything, or you kind of look like in that video that you just went right back into it, like you're ready to go?
Yeah, I just kind of gave myself a second or two to kind of like embrace the fun of it, like laugh it off. Like there's nothing I can do about it now, like it's in the past. Just had to laugh it off and dial back in for the game that we were about to play.
You know, it goes down to the wire, they get one, and you kind of had the feeling like, man, is that really going to be the only goal we get? And you guys were knocking on the door, you had your chances, a couple posts, and then like honestly the game just kind of runs out, right? The clock expires. Like, what do you guys remember after that game? I know you had like a great group of leadership that was graduating after that, so I'm sure that's probably like the first thing you're thinking about.
Yeah, that one stung, obviously. Losing in the finals, no matter what the situation, stinks. And then in a hard-fought game like that, it's tough. It might have been, don't fact check me, but it might have been the first time that our program had gotten shut out in like an absurd amount of years in a game, whether it be nationals or regular season.
Little editor's note here, it had been since October 16th, 2015, since the Adrian College Bulldogs had failed to score a goal during a game.
That's a tough pill to swallow. So you think about it from the stance of like the seniors that year in the fifth years, who like, that's their last one. They were just the team to get shut out in the last game of the year. Like, it's obviously not a great feeling. You can easily guess that. But those leaders last year were great. Like, that group was great in general. And it's too bad we couldn't get it done, but there's so many things we could be proud of from that year.
At that point, you knew you were going over to Romania too at the end of the year. Like, what was that process like? Like, how did you guys find out that was, going to be, an opportunity that you had to go over and represent Team Canada?
Well, I actually got the phone call back home, like over Christmas break, from Coach Mike Petrus. I was at the mall with my mom, and I got a call from Grand Rapids area code. I was like, oh, it's got to be spam, whatever. So I let it go to voicemail. And then I get a text from Gary later in a group chat with me, Sheldon Nolan, and Teo, from Gary being like, hey, Mike tried to reach out to you guys, phone him back. So I was like, oh, shoot, okay. So then I shot him the phone call back and invited me to join the team for that trip. And it was kind of told my mom, I was like, hey, that's the phone call I wanted. And yeah, it was awesome.
I got the call in November around Thanksgiving time, Grand Rapids, Michigan. I never answered it and I never really thought anything about it. A week later, G texted me and was like, hey, did Mike call you? I'm like, what? Mike Petrusma, the coach of Canada, tried calling you, he said, last week. And I go look at my voicemail, and sure enough, I have the voicemail where it'll literally write out what the message says. And I'm reading it. It's like, hey, it's Mike Petrusma, Team Canada. I just want to invite you to play in Romania at the World Cup. And I'm like, oh. So I just let that voicemail cook and bake real well for a week before calling him back. So I called him back right away. I was like, awesome, thanks. But it was really cool. It's a cool moment.
I've heard some stories about Coach Petrusma and, him being a great guy, and he's been around the ACHA for a really long time. Do you have any funny stories of him over in Romania? Or was he kind of a little more laid back because it wasn't Calvin he was coaching?
He seemed to be pretty laid back for the couple weeks we were with him there. He's awesome, though. I sat next to him on one of the flights over. Shot the breeze for a long time. He's a great guy, super easy to talk to, and it's always fun now too when we play Calvin, always getting the hug from at the end of the handshake line. But yeah, he's a great guy.
You could tell he's chill. On the flight home, me and our other teammate Matthew DeCesare, we upgraded to first class for the long haul home, because my flight there was absolutely horrendous. Just couldn't lean back, stuck in the middle. I was not ready for an 8.5 hour flight pulling to New York like that again. So the upgrade was $300 or something, a little steep, but I maxed out the visa for it, and I was just sitting there beside Matthew, and sure enough, Mike Petrusma did the same thing. He's right beside us on the row above. He's funny. I'm just ordering double Jack and Cokes the whole ride home, and he's just laughing at us. He's turning the cheek, kind of. He's really cool guy, good coach, and I was grateful to be there with him.
How is that playing Canada USA final? How is that playing against your Adrian teammates on the other side?
Dude, I wish we won.
Yeah.
they played so well together, that USA team. They played very well. And Gary had them
just like he had us going.
He had them just like us. They were a tight ship over there.
From the get-go, too. I remember the first day we got there in we were in Albany, and we're on the ice getting ready, and Gary's got the boys doing team building activities that we do in October.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there what the heck's going on out there? And it translated the ice real well for them, for sure.
Yeah, they were good, and obviously just playing against them and when they were winning and losing them was so annoying. Yeah. Just because them
and you try to chirp and they just laugh at you. I was on the bench for the last game, and I'm yelling at Sebastian Smith Bubba. I'm just giving him every chirp in the book as best I can, try to get him off his game. He looks at me, just goes Deco, shut up. I was okay. there's not much else I can say to that. Yeah. So
Deuce was a freshman.
Yeah.
Dylan Gajewski's on USA, he's a freshman, and he's beating me in the finals in Romania. I'm like, this sucks, dude. Get me out of here.
I didn't even think about having to play against Gary too. Was he saying anything, or was he locked in when he was behind the bench for them?
He was dialed in. I think I was chirping over the bench. I'm just giving him F-bombs and
I was chirping a little bit too. I got one smile out of him the whole game. That's it. Come on. Dude, not even a brush off, just a
when he gets into game mode, man, he's dialed in. You could have said anything. It's he can't even hear you.
I know. He came up and said, introduced himself to me on the ice afterwards when you guys were celebrating the title. I didn't want to be the first one to engage, because I don't know if this guy's still locked in. Does he have to come down from that high of being behind the bench all game? And then, it was great to meet him and talk to him too. But preparing for this national tournament, the second time around here, you lose in the final. It's kind of this redemption tour. The whole goal is to get back to that game. And some of the best hockey games, I look back to that Ohio game, if we can talk about that one for a second, but that one I was I for sure thought was going to overtime. Maybe Deco, you can talk about that, because Damon on the other end of the ice was playing phenomenal too. It was kind of this goalie duel that came down to the wire.
Yeah, no, he was unreal. It was a lot of fun playing against him, looking down at the other end when he's making big saves. Just pushes me to make another big save to keep our team in it too. But those games are always fun now, especially like after, like we talked about with Romania, like Jack Glenn, Luke Reeve, Hollander Thompson on that team. It's seeing familiar faces on these teams now, like the Liberties, the Minots, the Ohios. When you see guys like that, it just makes it more fun because of that connection from Romania. But that Ohio game was a lot of fun, and it sure did come down to the wire there. Like, I remember when Cyrus Toth scored that game winner, like, I had Hollander Thompson, was it Hunts?
Yeah.
And Hunter Allen kind of battling out in front of the net. Like, Hunter's skate loop got caught over Halsey's tendon guard or whatever and just kind of took him out of the play completely. But I didn't even know we scored till I saw Cy hit 17 cellies in the corner. And then the refs disconnected the laces and it was kind of like, oh, shoot, like, we got to dial it in here. We got, what was it, like 4 minutes left, 3 minutes left, yeah. Something like that. But
yes. Yeah, Cy shot the arrow into the crowd 14 times.
Shot the arrow, combed his hair, did the selfie stick. You name it, he did it. He was spamming his controller.
You're going to love hearing that.
I completely missed that. I was right behind the net, and it was like kind of like it was like a bang bang play. And Deco, like you said, I didn't even know about the thing with the laces until, you know, we got a photo of it afterwards, and like a lot of people were just looking at that, and the play goes back the other way, and like they come untied as soon as the puck goes in the net. But we're going to have to pull back that footage and maybe do a Selly ranking of the different ones he hit.
Someone, I forget who it was, but someone got the shutter shots of him going by. He's doing that. No, it was kind of sweet too. Like, cause in front of me, I'm yelling at Hunter Allen to like, let it go. Cause like, you don't want him to get up and cross check him and take a penalty just in case. And like, sure enough, he didn't. And then if he does anything like that, we get a penalty. It's a whole different ball game at that point, but we don't have to worry about that now. So
not that you guys are thinking about it. Cause you play him every year in the national tournament, but like, do you get like a little bit of a pep in your step when you see like Ohio knocked off Minot and it's like, all right, like that's one less team we have to worry about? Or are you like, hey, like we'll play whoever we have to play?
I think we definitely have the we'll play whoever we want to play. I think if you're like a younger guy or you know, everyone's kind of hardwired a little bit different, you probably take that as like all right, like this is our year for sure now, like this is the stars are aligning. Speaking for myself, like I was mentally like, after losing 1-0 to Minot in the final last year and always being 1-2 with Minot every single year I'm here, I was ready to play Minot in the final. Like that was what I was picturing and imagining, and that was what's going to happen. So when it changed, I was like, oh shit, like what do I do now? It was a crazy tournament overall with the amount of upsets and games that happened. Like it was honestly a great year. It was awesome.
Yeah, it made for a lot of very entertaining matchups, especially early on. It's like kind of like a youth hockey tournament, right? Because you got like, you know, the banners and the t-shirt press going, and like you guys are out in your skate guards, like kind of watching the game beforehand. Like, is it hard to kind of like tone that all out and get ready to play the game? And if I were playing this thing, like I would probably be wanting watching like all four games that night, but it's like, no, you got to go back to the hotel. You got to get your meal. You got to rest. What is that like in kind of balancing it? You know, it is the national tournament. You want to have fun, but at the same time, you're there to get the job done.
He'll let us watch like a period or so during the day or after our game or whatever the case is of another game. Like once we get back to the hotel, depending on time, we eat as a team, do film either that night or the morning of for our next game. And then the guys will cram in a hotel room or a couple rooms and throw on full hockey, whatever it's called, and watch Ohio versus Minot or something. And so we still get to watch. It's fun. You don't get to be there in person. We make the most of it. We try and stay as focused as possible. And we do a pretty good job of it.
One guy I want to ask about, we kind of glazed over, you guys beat Liberty to get to the Ohio game. You know, another team that you guys play a lot throughout the season. You know, Sebastian Smith, like skill guy, they're doing the fake Michigan behind the net. Like, have you guys seen it all with that guy?
Dude, he is insane. I don't know where or why or how he thinks of these things, does these things, but that fake Michigan play, like that was our power play unit, and we worked on it one time in like February. Like we literally just did it once, like a dry run in practice. And then right before we jumped on the ice for that power play, him, Sebastian Smith, who we call Bubba, and Juice, number 66, were like, hey, it's going to work. Let's do it. I'm like, all right, like shit, I'll just win this drawback and you guys go do whatever the hell you want to do. Obviously, it worked like perfectly. It was nuts. I was like, how do you guys just think to do that right now? Like, it just takes a set of, you know, it's crazy. He's so skilled. He's so smart. Like,
well, then if you think back to like when we were in Liberty last year, he did that baseball move where he flipped it up over someone, over Verossing, then batted out of the air too. Like, guys, just his imagination, his creativity is off the charts. It's it's brutal to go against them in practice some days because they'll do some stupid stuff like that and make you look stupid as a goalie, but it's fun for sure.
Like you mentioned in practice, I imagine like kids doing Michigans in practice these days, it's like, oh, maybe they should be doing other things. Like, is he trying all this crazy stuff in practice? I feel like you guys have a lot of, you know, pretty good skill guys. You score a lot of goals. Like, are guys always, you know, trying to be really creative in practice?
Not like an absurd amount. Like, it's like, all right, enough, man. Like, whatever. But you'll literally, we'll be doing like a 2v2 battle drill or something, and it'll be hour two of practice. Like, no more wax left on the twig. Like, the ice is absolutely chewed up, just snowy. And he'll still somehow in tight pull off this like Michigan and tuck. And it's like, what? Like, how do you, like, what?
Yeah.
I don't know. He is insane with it. He plays tennis here at Adrian too. So I always say that his hand eye and his coordination, stuff like that, is all from tennis. I don't know. He is very skilled and smart with it too.
One of my favorites from your team this year, and I'm literally scrolling through the Instagram page now because I'm like, oh, there's another one we posted of Bubba. There's another one. Like, oh, another Michigan goal. The face-off play that you guys, and you didn't end up winning the game, but the one that Hatcher had, and it was, I can't remember who won the draw, but just textbook slip. So yeah. Clean.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did that like...
We ran it quite a few times.
Five or six times perfectly.
Yeah, and worked every single time. It was it's funny to see because just as a goalie, I'm sitting in that far crease. I go, oh, whoop, and then bang, bang, it's in. And yeah, it's fun to watch.
That one actually won moment of the year, didn't it? Yeah, our like school awards here at Adrian. It was like best moment of the year, and it was nominated and actually won just last week.
You were like a goal in the national championship game isn't good enough for moment of the year.
Yeah, I wasn't even back here yet. I was still in Virginia, so I mean, it's fine. They can mail me my awards. I got, I'm sure I got plenty of them.
Let's walk through that national championship game. You guys going against a UNLV. Not a lot of people in ACHA 1 like UNLV because they got, you know, the flashy jerseys and like the social media and all that going for them out in Vegas. I don't think many people wanted to see you guys win it either. So I think more people were probably pulling for UNLV because they had never won it before. But like, what are you thinking about going into that matchup with them?
Yeah, for me personally, I was just thinking about playing them in Chicago when we had a hurt roster. A couple years ago when we went to Chicago, we were like flu ridden between our team, like everyone was down horrendous. Like
Smitty was conked.
Yeah. Connor Smith, who's on bingo, was conked. Chris Donaldson was out. Like Stanko out. Also on Roanoke now, started in Binnington, was out. Lifeless roster in the sense that even the guys who were good weren't good. And we played UNLV and they kind of handled us pretty good. Yeah. So, and that's the only time we've played them in my time. So that's all I could think about, which I guess wasn't the healthiest mindset to start.
I was thinking too about how like chirpy they were the whole time. Like I remember getting off the ice, I'm filling my water bottle, and I don't remember who it was, but came off the ice too and had something to say to me. I forget what he said. I was just in the zone, kind of whatever, tuning out. But after the game, I was just kind of like, okay, right on. And even when we played them in Chicago, like they wouldn't shut up in the tunnel, like in between the locker room, stuff like that, like always mouth flapping. So it was definitely one of those things where it's like, okay, like they want to play like this, we'll play our way and get the job done. Yeah. So
yeah, they're a competitive group there for sure. And we also played with a couple guys for Canada and Romania with a couple of their guys too, which was cool.
You want to talk about mouth flapping though. When you guys get up in a game, that bench is active too. Like if I was blindfolded, I would be able to tell Adrian was playing because your bench likes to get active too.
We're big on positive energy and we say positive energy is contagious. So to a certain degree, you got to, you know, not get too high, not get too low, but it's hard to not get too high when you're up a couple at the national tournament and, you know, you're trying to keep it rolling. So, I mean, it works out. But yeah, we're definitely a loud bench. We take pride in it. We create our own energy and set the pace and all that cliche stuff. And it's true. It works.
You know, going through that game, I was like, oh, here we go. It's going to be another like scoreless national championship game. You don't get a goal until late in that second period. Honestly, it was like a crazy sequence. It looked like De Cesare put it in. I can't remember who actually got credit for the goal.
Blake Weidman, freshman.
Yeah, just a crazy sequence. And it's like, all right, there's finally a goal and a really cool moment. You know, both Adrian women's teams are in attendance too. And feels like there was a lot of black and gold support in the guys. But like, how good of a moment was that when you guys jump out with the first goal?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I literally said it on the bench or maybe at the intermission, just like not to the whole group or anything, not the scary one, but I was like, there's no effing way we're not going to score a goal in the finals yet. Like, that's not happening. Like, there's no shot in hell. I refuse. Yeah. I will pick up the puck and skate through the crease and make it cross that line. Like, I do not care. But it was it's a sign of relief. You know, the game's not over. Like, they're going to push now when you go up one, and still a lot of time on the clock. But it was definitely nice to make sure we didn't, there wasn't a goose egg on the board again.
Because we had that one too that was called off initially before. And I was kind of like, I was fired up after that first one. Then they waved it off. I was like, okay, whatever, we're good. And then we scored that next one later. And like Teo said, it's just like a huge weight off your shoulder. You're just kind of like we got the first one. We can kind of like loosen up a little bit, but not enough to kind of lose it. But just enough like that, you're not going to get shut out again in the national final. Like just that weight off your shoulders.
Helps you not grip the stick too tight now.
Good breath of fresh air.
Yeah. Deco, you bring up a good point. I was like, if this was the NHL and we're doing a goalie interference review, like I thought that was a clean goal. Kind of UNLV pushed the guy into their goalie. And I remember looking back and I'm like, man, like I really hope that's not the difference tonight. And then, you know, puck don't lie. You guys end up taking it and jumping out to the lead. And then, of course, Teo comes down and rips one bar down and then doubles the lead for you guys.
That was the first of my career, maybe. No.
It didn't look like it was the first of your career, though. So you played it cool.
Honestly, it was kind of a broken play on the power play. And I was able to come down the middle and say, how you doing? And
My man, thank you, man.
Let's get out of here.
Deco, we got to talk about the save you made at the end, though. 2-0 game. I'm behind the net. I see the play happening. And in my head, I'm like, damn, that's a bummer. Like, shut out in the national championship game probably would have been pretty cool. And then, like, before that thought could even get out of my head, like, you came across and made the save. Is that something that you're just like, hey, I'm going to do everything we can to win? Or are you just, like, trying to find the puck and you know, you get your glove off and make that save?
It was more so like just doing whatever I could to help us secure the win. Like two goals is a cushion for sure. But if they get that one, then their energy is going to be high up there. So I just kind of read the play too and saw it develop as it developed. And then it slid across and was able to, like, there's a couple of pictures where you can see like Ethan McLaughlin's down there getting ready to block it. But like I was able to see the puck around him and I got my glove up and made the save. But no, it was more so just like the idea of, okay, like the boys got two, like let's keep it to that. Like I want this 2-goal lead at least. So
I was on the ice for that save, and once you saved it, I just turned around and I don't know why this was my first reaction. I just started laughing hysterically. I don't know why. I think I finally felt comfortable. I was like, oh, there's no freaking shot. They're scoring on this guy now. Like we got this. And I was just like crying laughing. And I think it was my guy who shot it. I probably blown aside. Like I didn't have my guy, but I was having fun with it, I guess.
It was like the moment where it was like, it was like almost like the equivalent of an empty net goal. It was like, all right, like, you know, if they're not getting that one, you know, like it completely changes the game. You guys get an empty net. One of the cooler moments, Deco, I don't even know if you remember this, if you just blacked out in the moment, but the puck goes in for the empty netter and like you didn't even celebrate. And I was like, man, like this kid just like is so locked in right now.
No, I don't really remember. Like I kind of black out. Like I get in the zone. I just kind of just do my thing almost. Like I guys will ask me in between periods, like, hey, do you remember this? Like, what do you want me to do here? I'm like, sorry, bro. Like, I don't even know when you're talking about. Like, I'm just kind of like, whatever happens in the moments, in the moment, I just focus on that and kind of go from there. But no, I remember just kind of like when Teo scored the empty net, just a big like, holy smokes, like it's gonna happen. And then yeah, rest is history.
At that point, you're like loosening up the blocker and gloves so you can like get it off pretty easily when the buzzer goes out.
Exactly, yeah.
One guy I want to ask about too, you know, I'm curious because you guys, you know, played with him as a player. He comes back as a volunteer assistant coach, is Tyler Fife. Like he was one of those seniors who lost the year prior to. He comes back and helps coach. How cool was it to see him in that moment? And then maybe talk about like what it was like having a guy you played with be your coach now.
I'll start by saying he transitioned from the role of like, you know, good friend and fellow player and teammate to coach really, really well. I know you guys have spoken to him. He's a really well-spoken, like he's professional and with what he does. The transition he made wouldn't always be easy. Like I know for me, if I tried to coach this group next year, I'd be like, you know, I'd probably crack jokes at the times. I probably shouldn't and whatever the case. But he does a really good job of playing the line. He loves this place so much. Like he actually bleeds black and gold. Winning this year, it was dedicated towards everyone from last year who lost 1-0 in the final with sucks, but just to have him here for it, like past captain, last year fifth year with us, loses in the finals last game, comes back to coach, like gets another one, like just really happy for him, and he deserves all the success he's had and that he's gonna have because he works his bag off for it. And I got nothing but good things to say about Pfeiffer.
just to speak on that guy's like dedication to school, Adrian, like he's not getting paid to be our assistant coach right now. Like he's volunteer assistant coach. So he's out there at 6 a.m. before our 8:30 or 8 o'clock practice working with our ACHA D3 team. And then when he's not doing that, he's working maintenance around the school. When he's not doing that, he's with the sports information development program or whatever it is that he's doing there, like covering lacrosse, golf, basketball, like everything. You name it, Tyler Fife's doing it around Adrian. Like he's so dedicated to the school. Like Teo said, like he bleeds black and gold. It's awesome to see his dedication towards the school and the program that he's been a part of for so long.
Yeah.
In that moment, you guys win it. Like, what do you remember? What's maybe your favorite celebration memory, whether it was like on the ice afterwards, or maybe you're getting back to campus and you're celebrating with a trophy? Like, what's a moment that's going to stand out to you when you look back on the celebration?
I honestly think for me, like just sitting in the hotel after the game with the guys, just kind of like enjoying the time together, like, because you're not going to get this moment to have again. So just sitting around like all night with the boys, shooting the breeze, like laughing about stories throughout the year, laughing about stuff throughout the game, like just kind of like sitting there with all 25, 30 of us, like in the hotel conference room, just enjoying the win. Like we worked so hard together all year to get there. And now that the job was finished for that year, that we could just sit there and kind of just go, like, awesome, kick our feet up and just enjoy it with each other in that moment. Like we didn't have to worry about class the next day. We didn't have to worry about anything going on. Like we were just there embracing the incredible feeling that it was to win.
I think the moment I'll never forget, obviously that's all awesome, like love my boys and love hanging out. The moment I'll never forget is after we put in the empty netter, I was stuck out there for like a minute and a half, and there was, I don't know, 12 seconds left or something, maybe, I can't remember. I was stuck out there for like a minute and a half, like ice the puck like three times. I remember saying to you, like, I'll just keep icing it. Like, yeah. I'm so gassed, like trying to kill off the rest of this game. And then we put it in and I get back to the bench and I'm just like huffing and puffing, like can't wait to just sit down for a second. And G tries to throw me back on the ice to have all seniors on the ice. And I was like, there's no shot. Like, send someone else. I do not care. Because he wanted the seniors to be on the ice for throwing up the gloves. I was like, I'll get the next one, coach. You're good. Like, I do not care. I'm gassed. Like, let me sit for a second. I'll never forget that. Just telling him, no thanks. I don't want to be on the ice at the end of the game. Like Dico said, like, you work so hard and just sitting around was fun. Having family there was real nice. Like we went to a little pub spot with the trophy and with family and friends, and we spent the night there and then went back to the hotel, and it was special to have my family there. Over playing away from home, they don't get to see you that often and watch you that often, so it was really cool they were able to make that trip. I'll never forget anything out of it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You guys mentioned 90% of the student population at Adrian is athletes. It's a very competitive school, you know, whether it's the NCAA teams or the club teams at any given level at any sport. It's a very competitive school, a very like driven school. Like, how cool was that to see the women's team bring home the national title as well on the ACHA side?
Really cool.
Yeah. It was awesome. I mean, I don't know the last time that happened. The crazier thing is, I don't know the next time it will happen. Hopefully next year.
But
yeah, it's really cool. It speaks wonders to like what Adrian is in terms of, it is a hockey school. But it isn't just that. There's athletics in general make this place thrive, and you know, it's a powerhouse in a lot of things.
Before we go, you mentioned it's a powerhouse in a lot of things. What is maybe one thing people don't know about Adrian College? Is there a go-to spot on campus that people should know about? But what's an Adrian College secret? Or maybe that's the town of Adrian. Is there something in the water in the town that people should know about before they get on campus? Because you guys both, you toured remotely. And is there something that surprised you once you got there?
I mean, it's not your typical college town. It's really small. Not anything crazy about like the bars here and stuff like that. It's just, the biggest thing about Adrian is I think people like it so much and stick around so long. They want to do their fifth years and they want to stay as long as they can. That sense of community that's here is actually insane. Like, you'll never want to leave this place. We call it the little Adrian bubble. It's not real. This isn't real life. Yeah. Like, anything goes here. It's like the Wild West a little bit, but in a good way. Like, I, for one, I'm not looking forward to leaving and growing up. I'd play another four if I could. So Adrian is a great spot. Nothing but good things to say.
Yeah.
And the hidden gems will probably stay hidden, to be honest with you. Yeah.
I love that line. Well, hey, thank you guys for joining us and kind of recapping this year. And once again, congratulations.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Thanks so much.
Once again, thank you to Noah and Mateo for joining us again wonderful insights on their run to the national championship. Again, just thrilling hockey all around on their run there. I mean, Collins and Herm, we've talked about it a couple times now, but some of those games were, I mean, that Adrian Ohio game, there was a lot of people afterwards saying that that was the national championship game. And I know Ohio played a number of nail biters like that, but Adrian College just got the bounces when they need to. It was a wonderful run by them. And Collins, I didn't know, did you have any particular moment that stood out to you on Adrian's run?
I mean, there's two that come top of mind immediately. First was the fake Michigan. That was so sick. Noah's save in the national championship.
That was what I was so impressed with, is because I know the whole game kind of changes if he doesn't save that, but it felt like he went through the extra effort to keep that shutout alive.
It kind of felt like, you know, the cherry on top as well.
He left no doubt that he was the most valuable player of the tournament. Herm, are there any moments that stood out to you from Adrian?
I mean, that moment with the women's team behind the UNLV net, unreal. Just to see the unity across the sports, across all of the teams, it's awesome.
And you got, not only did you get a shot of them in front of their women's one team, but you also got shots of them in front of their women's two team too. And not as much emotion in those shots, but there was a lot of Adrian fans in the crowd that night for the national championship game. And that was really cool to see. All right. Question of the week. Was digging into the tank for this one. I don't know if we've ever done this one before. I think we've done a lot of jersey related questions. I wanted to know, in your opinion, which ACHA or AAU team desperately needs a uniform update? Herm, I will throw it over to you first.
I'm going to say BGSU. And before people freak out, I'm not talking about the off-white retro one. I'm talking about the orange and brown one with the diagonal BGSU and the half stripes on the sleeve. It's just not a good look, in my opinion. It just kind of looks thrown together, you know, like part of it with like the lower brown below the shoulders looks like when you're making an EASHL team and you pick the wrong layer color. Like, it just looks off. You know what I mean?
I could get behind that too, especially too. They could take a page out of some of these other M2 teams that also I feel like M2 teams do two things. They either try to replicate the NCAA team on campus, or they try to do the exact opposite of what the NCAA team does. I think they could benefit, like that cream jersey does. I think it's really cool because it's something different from what their NCAA team does, where I feel like their home and road set is a little too similar to what they already have going on campus. So I could get behind that. Collins, is there a team to you that stands out in needing an update?
I'm going to keep it local, keep it in the state of Pennsylvania. Two teams jump to front of mind here. Lehigh, like BGSU, I feel like with the brown and off-white color scheme, there's a lot of potential, but I feel like they've had these jerseys for such a long time. I know they just did a refresh this season, but I still feel like they're a little too similar to their old jerseys, because I mean, I think for their new homes, it's Lehigh, and then they actually had the logo. Before, it just said Lehigh in just like a block font, which is classic. I think it's cool. And then also Pitt. They've had this uniform set for so long. I think they're due for an update. I'm not saying it's a bad uniform set at all. There's a lot of potential with some of the history with their football jerseys and all that stuff that they could really do something cool. I would love to see yellow helmets like the football team. I think that could be pretty cool. But I don't know. Sometimes it's pretty hit or miss.
Yeah, I think we talked about the Pitt jerseys at Nationals, because in my head, like, if I closed my eyes and was like, what does Pitt's hockey jerseys look like? I think that's exactly what I think they'd look like. But I can get behind what you're saying, too, and that they've had those for a really long time. And, you know, in college athletics, it's all about, you know, having the new modern jerseys, right? So that, you know, you draw in the recruits and you're getting some buzz on social media.
Yeah, I'm not saying reinvent the wheel here. I'm not saying ditch what they have and go with a completely new template. My thought more in my mind was update it to the more Adidas type collars. Just refresh it, make it look a little bit more modern. I think it's still a great jersey.
I've been scrolling through our Instagram page just looking for a jersey, and I feel like maybe we do maybe we do a good job of promoting the teams that have good looking jerseys. Maybe those posts do better, and that's why we share them. But you talk about a lot of things that have made them so successful in the last couple of years here, and I just think if they got a fresh, clean, new set of jerseys, they would be on another level. It is crazy crazy the amount of attention we give these guys, and they just have the most basic home and road set, and that is the UNLV Skating Rebels. You know, they have the third jerseys, which are nice. They have the crazy helmet decals, which are nice, but I mean, they've got a pretty bland black and white set with just UNLV across the chest, pretty basic stripes. And again, they might be one of those schools where, like, you know, the Rebel logo isn't maybe as accepted as it once was, and they can only use that UNLV arch on certain materials. So I would love to see them do something crazy, you know, Vegas style. At the same time, there's got to be a balance, because I do think the reason I love their helmet decals so much is because they have such a simple jersey. So you leave kind of the flair for the headpiece. So that's a team that I would love to see get an update. And then a couple other teams that I think that just have had jerseys for a really long time that come to my mind from my playing days. But like, I think Buffalo and I think Stony Brook, like those are two teams that I feel like have had the same jerseys for like 10 years. Like, I'm sure they could do something different. And both are kind of carbon copies. You got Buffalo, who wears basically Air Force jerseys. And then you have Stony Brook, who basically wears BU jerseys. So I think something a little bit more original from those teams could be cool to see down the road. I had something on my mind this week too, for the little segment that we like to call 611 Thoughts, just kind of taking a deep dive into the ACHA and AAU college hockey, maybe from the perspective of our friend Elliot Friedman over at 32 Thoughts. But I was talking this past weekend about the new conference that Keene State is joining. They play in the Little East Conference, which is, I think, a play on like the Big East. So they're the Little East, which is a collection of Division III schools in New England. And so they're going to have Plymouth State in their conference. They're going to have University of Southern Maine. They're going to have Castleton, UMass Boston, UMass Dartmouth. And I just saw that they are going to add Babson and Norwich. So some pretty hockey heavy schools joining this new conference, which, I mean, that place is going to be rocking. Especially, I was thinking, you know, if they can get a home and home series between Plymouth State and Keene State, those are two pretty popular state schools in New Hampshire at the Division III level. So that could be a huge rivalry if you do a home and home series there with packed barns on campus. But it got me thinking, because I think the ACHA has some untapped potential in the Northeast, you know, because a lot of the teams in the Northeast are M2 and they are essentially the JV team on campus behind these Hockey East juggernauts. With Keene State now adding NCAA hockey, what are some schools in the Northeast that could be on the radar as like a destination place to play ACHA hockey? So obviously the first one that comes to mind is URI, and they have been the king of ACHA hockey in New England for a long time now. They have Brad Boss Arena on campus. They've won an ACHA M1 national title before. The writing is on the wall for URI hockey. And I would like to think they have, you know, somebody has a thought of them going NCAA soon, but it seems like they've been so close for so long. I don't know if that'll ever happen. But some other schools that came to mind for me is Bates College. They have a rink on campus in Lewiston, Maine. They are one of the few NESCAC schools that doesn't offer varsity hockey.
In fact, they're the only NESCAC school that doesn't offer varsity hockey. Everybody, including Wesleyan, has hockey. To your point, I don't know if they'd become a destination school. I feel like it's very much an academic school. I think they should, though, like to round out the rest of the NESCAC. Like, they should be NCAA D3.
Well, and what's crazy too is there are NESCAC teams that don't have rinks on campus. You look at a school like Tufts, or actually it might just be Tufts. I can't think of another NESCAC school that doesn't have a rink on campus, but Bates has a rink on campus. And during COVID, they weren't even putting ice in. They were using it as a testing center, and the team had to go play somewhere else. So it's crazy that they don't have a team, or maybe a more prominent team in the ACHA. My older brother Joe, when he played ACHA at Merrimack College, he actually played against Bates. That's how I found out they had a team. Another team that my brother played against was Bridgewater State. Then you got, you know, Bryant University, Central Connecticut. I threw the Coast Guard Academy in there. Fairfield University has been making their way up the AAU ranks. You got Mass Maritime, a team that's been to nationals at AAU. And then I also threw in the University of New Haven, another AAU team. So Herm, I know being from New York, maybe some of those Connecticut schools are more familiar with you, but is there any school that we just rattled off that maybe you think could take that step into like being an avenue for maybe kids in the Northeast to go play college hockey?
I think out of those schools, it's probably Mass Maritime. They had a really, really strong year in AAU D2. If they continue that momentum moving forwards, Who knows what winds up happening? I know it's a little bit of a specialized school. I'm interested to see.
Yeah, I would almost put in Mass Maritime into that Bates category. It's like, I don't know if they'll ever become that destination, but if they could find the right guys, they'd be a darn good hockey team, right? Because it takes a certain level of commitment to get into a school like that. A team that I somehow forgot on this list also is Roger Williams. I think that's a team, another Division III school that has been very good at the M2 level, has not made it out of regionals in a couple of years now, but that's another team that comes to mind.
If the Army and Navy service academies are able to put together quality teams on a consistent level, I mean, what's stopping Mass Maritime?
And we've seen the Coast Guard Academy go to M3 Nationals before, and they were shorthanded, and they were somehow hanging in there in games against, you know, Dartmouth and Hope College too. So they were certainly, just like those other service academy teams, they're very tough to play against.
Fairfield. Getting to an NCAA Division I level, I feel like that's a school that should have D1 hockey, but I would be curious, can Fairfield hold two NCAA Division I teams? You would have Sacred Heart and them. You'd have an instant rivalry. Could a small beach town like Fairfield, if you could call it a beach town, support two NCAA teams? It's like, you know, too much supply, not enough demand.
Honestly, my question isn't even like, would they be the next team to go NCAA behind Keene State? But it's like, I just looked at Keene State as one of those schools. It's like the rare school in New England that has a hockey team, but not an NCAA hockey team. So I just wonder in these next couple of years, if any of these schools that we mentioned, I certainly think Fairfield's presence in AAU would help them. They can get a rowdy crowd going to games as well. So, you know, maybe that's a spot, but I would love, because like, there's nothing cooler when you go play URI and half the guys in the starting lineup are from Rhode Island. Like, I think that is really cool, because, you know, kids growing up playing hockey in Rhode Island, they want to play college hockey close to home, they can go to URI. Like, I would love to see another one of these schools, you know, kind of step up and not necessarily fill the void that Keene State has left, because Keene State will still have an M2 team. But again, a lot of these schools in the Northeast are kind of that, they play second fiddle on campus because the NCAA teams are so popular. So just kind of something to think about. And I'm curious if, you know, people listening to this, if there's a school that comes to mind that maybe we haven't talked about in New England or even the Northeast, because, you know, you got plenty of schools in New York that are kind of in this same boat, with, especially with how popular, you know, the SUNY schools hockey teams are. So definitely something to think about too. But time to start picking up the pucks as we wrap up the show here. Herm, I saw you had some notes here. We got some more stick taps maybe that we forgot about.
Yeah, one that I saw on the feed as I was looking through for some jerseys. Huge news for our boy Ryan Beatty out of Tennessee. He is continually crushing it for the Vols. He accepted two internships, one with USA Baseball as a creative services intern, and then he's going to travel to Paris, France to photograph the 2024 Paris Paralympic Games for USA Today. That man is destined for some very, very big things, and I'm just privileged that we got in on the ground floor with him at the AAU level.
No, that's awesome. He killed it, and it was so nice to meet him in Savannah too, and he was so thankful too for the work that we've done just to promote his photos. So I had a thought the other day too that I wanted to share with you guys, because I don't think we realize like how much our parents go through as we grow up, but I was starting to think about it when I made the 2.5 hour bus ride for a lacrosse game the other day, and the guys just like did not show up, and they got killed by a team that didn't want to be there. And here I am, you know, 23 years old on the bus ride home being like, well, that was a waste of my afternoon. And now I'm thinking about like all these parents that drive across the state, across the country for their kids to play sports, you know, whether it be lacrosse or hockey or baseball or basketball. It must be so hard to keep your cool, especially when you sacrifice that much time. For me, I don't have a kid on team, but 2.5 hour drive there, 3 hours there, 2.5 hour drive back. Like, I'm never getting that afternoon back. And so I was just thinking about like, hey, maybe that is why hockey parents are so crazy. I hope all the parents that listen to this, because I know there's a decent chunk who do, know how, you know, appreciative we all are of the work that they do. And again, I'm certainly not ready to be in that position too, after how furious I was on the bus ride home from Hanover the other day. So big shout out to all the hockey parents listening to this one. Two episodes ago, I did mention I was doing a little GM work in the background. I think on the intro half of one of our episodes, I was in the background making some deals for Frechette Tire. This weekend, we are playing in a tournament in Marlboro, which is always great. I cannot remember the last time I skated in Marlboro, but I'm really looking forward to playing in the Chowder Cup, playing for Frechette Tire, and we were missing some guys. So I got the text from my older brother like, hey, can you round up a couple of the Cuse guys? I'm fully ready to clip me being the GM, and that's either going to be an old takes exposed or a flaming hot take that it worked out. So really looking forward to that weekend as well. Great to get back on the horse and record another episode with you guys. I feel like the off-season content keeps coming. Herm, I want to give you a chance to plug some photos. We're looking for more photos. We want to showcase some of the best photographs from the postseason.
From the postseason, and then as we get into tryouts and everything over the off-season, make sure to visit our link in bio. Just go through the content submission form. We just want to see your content and not have to screenshot it off Instagram, because as a photographer, I want to make sure your work gets posted in the best quality possible.
I think that's a perfect place to wrap up. As always, too, even if you're not looking to submit photos, if you have news or highlights you want to share with us, DMs are always open. At Hockey House Pod on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, whatever you're getting your social media content, you can probably find us there as well. So thank you so much again for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
See you, boys.